And it's fantastic to see architects utilizing repurposed spaces. There are so many beautiful structures. And if you take that away, that's your history you're taking away. You can put a bunch of modern day units and it kind of ruins the aesthetic.
Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 259 with Damien and Steph. Damien and Steph are the creative team behind Tiny Spaces, and they traveled all over Iceland to film some extraordinary tiny and small houses. In this interview, I will ask them all about their experiences, what the Icelandic tiny houses are like, what are some of the design features, how they keep them warm, and what they've learned from touring so many absolutely stunning small spaces. It made me want to go to Iceland, and I think it's going to do the same for you. I hope you stick around for the interview. Hey, it's Ethan. I'm a tiny house author, speaker, and teacher, and I'm the host of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast. I've been making the show for free for the past 5 years, but one thing that you might not have known about me is that I love coffee. If anything I've written or produced has helped you on your tiny house journey and you're looking for a way to say thanks, a coffee is a great way to do so. Head over to thetinyhouse.net/coffee to buy me a cup. I really appreciate your generosity and kindness. The Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast will always be free, and I bring you a fresh new episode every Friday morning. If you are able to chip in, I really appreciate it. Again, that website is thetinyhouse.net/coffee. All right, let's jump into this week's interview. Here with Damien and Steph, the creative team behind Tiny Spaces. Damien and Steph traveled all over Iceland to film some extraordinary, tiny, and unique houses. Damien and Steph, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So, how did you get interested in Iceland, or why Iceland?
Well, we were actually on another job over in Iceland, and we pitched the idea to the production company at Shelter Stream. Uh-huh. And hey, we're in Iceland at the moment, and because we'd already done season one in Australia,
okay,
we said, why don't we take this opportunity to go and suss out as many cool little houses that we can? And yeah, so they said, amazing, great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the team just put it all together very last minute.
Yeah. It was a lot of Slack conversations, and it was just super deep in like how many interviews we needed to get. I think we did about 15 houses and shot 15 interviews, and it was just like really just run and gun, really. So
nice. So how did you, I mean, some of these houses, and you sent me lots of images, which I'll include on the show notes page for the episode, they're just absolutely stunning, like modern little homes, like seemingly like planted in the middle of nowhere. So how did you find them?
Well, a lot of work was done by Dustin and Camille, the producers for Tiny Spaces. And I think we just all jumped on it together, and we were just like, you know what? This looks like a cool place. Well, this looks like a cool place. They found a lot of stuff on Instagram and like cool architecture, like magazines, so, and like obviously a lot of online stuff. They just looked up Tiny Spaces and
and whatever they found, they tried to fit into a specific narrative and also make sure our timeline would work to travel around the entire country.
Yeah,
and it all just worked out.
That's awesome. Can you briefly explain what Shelter Stream is, and is that your business, or is that a separate thing?
No, Shelter Stream is basically a Netflix for architects.
Okay, cool.
For nerdy architects that love seeing cool tiny spaces, cool structures, interesting people that just create the most amazing houses and spaces. And it's a streaming service that you can get on all of your devices and stream from anywhere.
Okay, so ShelterStream has some of your content on it as well as other filmmakers, but it's all just about architecture and homes. Okay.
Yeah, from across the globe. Yeah.
Cool. And is Tiny Spaces, is it live now? Can people watch it, or is it coming out at some point?
Tiny Spaces is live now. I think the last episode has just gone up. So episode 4 or 5 might have just gone up. So check it out.
Nice. So are tiny houses kind of part of Icelandic culture?
Yes. You'll see in one of the turf houses it's very modern. It's very old school sort of building style.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, where was it bought from? Ireland?
What? You're talking about turfing?
Yeah, the turf houses.
I think small houses, not, it's hard to say, because in the cities, like, everyone lives in these big concrete apartments and concrete houses. Okay. There's very limited resources that you can use and materials you can use because of the harsh conditions of Iceland.
Yeah.
So I think modern architects are utilizing what was done before to make more sustainable homes.
Okay.
So it's becoming more and more popular. And I think the tradition of turf housing, which is something that they used to do a long time ago.
What is turf housing?
Basically rocks and sticks put together, just using the land and basically molding a house into the land. So it's like, looks like a seamless bit of architecture.
And they dig slabs of turf and layer it on top of each other to insulate walls, to insulate the roof. And it stays really warm. Stays really, really warm.
Okay.
Depending on some of the locations as well, they would make like a big house, or some would have like a small house. They would make churches. They would
Like even a stable. You drive around Iceland and you'd even see like a massive waterfall and then a giant mountain, and inside that mountain is a small little turf hut, which is a shed.
Yeah, which
or a mine, or you know.
Yeah, they've actually built it into the land, they've integrated it into the.
So it looks like it's always been there. It looks like it's part of nature.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
So modern architects are utilizing it for, you know, roofing on these incredible houses now.
Yeah, like super modern structures now are taking the turf sort of insulation and placing it onto the modern roofs now to create an extra
and
barrier.
It really like aesthetically looks like these, you know, modern houses should be there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just the imagery is just stunning, and the homes are amazing. There's one, I think it's kind of like the home that's being used as like the cover image for Tiny Spaces Iceland, but it's like, it looks like it's mostly glass. And you can like see right into it, like into the bathroom and stuff. So what is that? Is that a dwelling? Is that like a retreat? Like what is that space?
A retreat. An Airbnb retreat.
Okay.
And an escape set on a lava field.
Whoa.
An old lava field. And it's in the middle of nowhere. There's actually another one located just down the road, but they're positioned in a way that you can't see inside.
That's good.
So, yeah, it is pretty much like the only time that you can have ultimate privacy in nature with a giant volcano behind you as well. I think it's called Katla.
Yeah, Katla. Hetla. It was one of the most active or dangerous volcanoes.
I mean, they're all active volcanoes.
Yeah, massive volcanoes. So apparently the rocks and all the lava that comes out can shoot up to 60 kilometers. So he was just out of striking range.
Okay.
And I think the inspiration behind it is just to, you know,
be immersed in nature. And it's literally to
unwind and relax and just
get away from all of the noise, really.
Yeah.
Although there is like wine stuff there. But
there's no town, like it's not close.
There's towns are not that close, and it's just, to be secluded and just.
Yeah. Unwind.
Yeah, get out of it.
It almost looks like, you know, it pulls from the surroundings in terms of the color of the lava rocks. The house itself almost looks like a lava rock just kind of planted in that field.
100%. That's what we really did find over there, is a lot of people are just trying to use the landscape and bring it into the dwelling as much as they could. Even inside, they would bring like the moss inside and all the branches that are around the area they would use for the light fittings. And
Well, that's actually something Ari, who owns the glass cottage, was saying, that everything that's used internally, all the interior design, it's sourced locally from local artists and manufacturers, and he'd knit all the little things. So it was really important that it was, I think it would fit obviously with the aesthetic of the area, but also
nice,
big part of the Icelandic culture.
The Icelandic culture.
And are they completely off grid, those lava field houses?
No, they're not off grid.
Okay.
But a lot of the electricity in Iceland is from thermal and waterfalls create the energy for the electricity. Right. So
it's run with thermal.
With geothermal. Okay. That's awesome. Yeah, there are most ways that European countries and Northern European countries are so far ahead of the United States in terms of the alternative energies, and the geothermal is one of them. I teach a tiny house course, and there's one of my students is really interested in geothermal, and he did a bunch of research and found that you can't get a small enough geothermal system for a small house. Like they're more industrial sized here. They haven't like figured out how to make them available to individual homes or smaller homes.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, Australia's very behind as well, so Europe just has it together.
Europe does have it together. I mean, there are more people in a smaller space, so I feel like in some ways they have had to get a bit more creative and technologically advanced with their housing because of that limitation. Like, there's just so much space here. You can just go off and find your own hunk of land and do whatever you want if you want to.
Yeah, another thing with the glass cottage as well is the insulation. So it's like triple glazed windows, and it's like you can be in the super harsh condition outside, walk inside, and it's just completely peaceful.
Because all of the houses, all of them have to withstand extreme winds, extreme snow, extreme anything,
Yeah.
One of the houses is located on water, and there could be like mini tornadoes in the water.
Oh gosh.
Or like sand pelting at the exterior.
Okay.
So have strong materials.
So hence the like I see like a lot of concrete, a lot of stone, a lot of metal.
Yeah.
Durable materials. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very durable.
Yeah.
And what season were you there filming?
It was actually May.
It was their spring.
So there was they were 18-hour days. Like the days were 18 hours of light. It was the most incredible.
Wow. So we did hike at 1 in the morning.
Yeah. It'd be like midnight. It'd just be completely daylight. And it was just.
But wow. North of the volcano mountain, north of the island, it's freezing. It's so cold. So we were full ski gear in spring, but the south is
it was pretty good. Chill, yeah.
Okay. Cool. And I saw, do they heat much with wood or other biofuels? I did see some wood stoves in some of the images.
That was more in like the museums. So some of the turf farms that we shot were actually museums. Icelandic National Gallery and Museum of Iceland bought the farms just to preserve it, because otherwise if they didn't buy it, it would just rot and fall to pieces.
Okay.
So it's just like a showpiece. It's like, here's the...
I mean, National Heritage.
National Heritage,
yeah.
Like here's like the... where they cooked and all of that sort of stuff. So there weren't really too many fireplaces because... as I mentioned before, like everything is heated by geothermal. So the houses are completely warm inside. Yeah,
they were all surprisingly well insulated, and I think that's environmentally a huge concern for all of the architects building these houses. They want to make sure that they can withstand all of that.
Yeah.
But in terms of like how they would cook and all that, everything was quite modern.
Yeah, so. Still very modern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They all do look very, even there's one, and I don't know the name of it, but it's it looks like it's kind of very close up to the slopes of some kind of ridge line. And the house itself looks very old. Like it looks like a stucco or like a stone hut.
So that was an old barn where they kept sheep.
Okay.
And that land was, that farm has been around since settlement, which is like in the 900s, or don't quote me on that, but around 900.
Okay.
So like super old school. And, it was more about the person that owned the house, Gudrun, her name is, and her husband,
mm-hmm.
and they just worked with a company called Studio Bua, and they just mm-hmm. came together and said, we still want to keep this old house as it is and just turn it into this, just an amazing space, and being able to,
I mean, there were other architects that wanted to take it away, but Studio Boa wanted to utilize the space and make it something unique. So it's okay. This beautiful art studio where you can go and create downstairs. And as as you're working, you can work in a kitchen and you can see in the annex, you can see like your art and the studio in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
And then upstairs is your where you would sleep and everything. Yeah. But I think just that being surrounded by nature, you're being surrounded by something so old and beautiful. I think she's got like a little garden in there too.
Yeah.
And then you've got a giant volcano mountain and then the sea. It's so stunning. So how could you not be inspired every day to create?
Yeah.
So beautiful.
I feel inspired just looking at the photo of it, not even being there.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
I mean, I wish I could find that in Australia. don't know where that is.
Maybe you'll have to make it.
Yeah. Maybe in the future.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask you. There's one. I guess it's called the Water Tower. It's like hoping actually, since this is a podcast, could you kind of describe the Water Tower for our listeners, and then kind of, I'm just curious to hear the story behind it.
Describe the Water Tower. So it was a block of concrete.
Okay.
That the owners, they looked at it and they said, you know what, we can do something with this. So they cut corners out of it.
Well, block of concrete is in the water tower was still there.
Yeah, the water tower was still there, 60 years old, not being used.
Okay.
And then they just said, yep, we're going to do something with this. They cut the sides out of it, wrapped it in metal, put two more layers on it, on top of it. Oh, no, sorry, build another layer on the top of it,
mm-hmm.
converted it inside. And the reason that it's a tiny space is the footprint that it takes up on the land. So they've just built it. They've just utilized the space that the water tower was,
and built upwards.
It just went up.
Yeah. Mm. So you see a concrete. You see a rusty metal outer shell with a core 10 steel.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see a blacked wood.
Shushigiban.
Yeah, the Japanese. How they burn the wood just to prevent rot.
And it's really strong.
Yeah.
So they just upkeep that whenever it gets discovered.
And then also, once again, upcycling as well. Like that's quite a big part of their process was upcycling. So they would use old glass panels, which would create the balcony. You guys call it balcony?
Yeah, the deck or the balcony.
Yeah,
or
the balcony around the glass. So, and it's just... It's just
but everything inside too, even their interior design is a lot of it's upcycled.
Yeah, old sinks and old cupboards and benches and stuff and concrete. Like they've created their own concrete bench and sink and Yeah, I don't know. Does that really explain it?
Yeah, no, that's great. Sorry to put you on the spot. I'll put pictures of that one in the show notes for sure. But I didn't even realize that it was a repurposed structure. I mean, it looks so intentional. Like, it just looks like a very modern design. It's kind of wider and bigger on top than it is in the main kind of section. But that's even cooler to know that it's an old water tower repurposed.
And it's fantastic to see architects utilizing repurposed spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many beautiful structures. And if you take that away, that's your history you're taking away.
Yeah.
You can put a bunch of modern day units and it kind of ruins the aesthetic of the fact that, you know, you're behind a volcano. Like, that volcano just stopped erupting at the time.
Yeah.
And you're by the ocean. It's just so inspiring.
Yeah, it can be more expensive, unfortunately, or it can seem like more work to reuse an old space than it can be to just kind of knock it down and build whatever you want. But I think that a lot of the beauty comes from the constraints of the old space.
100%. And that's definitely what we found with the family that did it. How much it meant to them really shines through in the episode.
They started their family in that house and they, you know, it was a real family effort. So I think that there's a lot of love behind that space for them.
Yeah,
and you can feel it. You can feel how much love and energy they've put into it to make it such a beautiful space for people to come in and visit.
Yeah. Like AJ and Ingeborg, who are the owners, like the chemistry that those two had and like the relationship building that happened in that place. Like, it just made them stronger as a team to build it together. Mm. And it's very inspiring. That's for sure. To see the couple together.
Nice. I was hoping, that you could each share, you know, if you have your one favorite tiny house from this project, and you can't choose the same one.
We often do.
Yeah.
I think they're good for different reasons, though. I have favorites for different reasons.
Okay.
Like, don't you think?
Yeah, in saying that, we did stay in only one of them. Two of them.
No, we stayed in two of them.
We stayed in the water tower, and then we stayed in the volcano by the sea.
Yeah. But
I know what my favorite is, and I think she knows what her favorite is as well, and I think they're the same, but you go.
Fair enough.
I think I would be so inspired to be creating art in Studio Boa's house. Mm-hmm. I think that was a stunning space, but in terms of, you know, I don't know, a cool place to live, I really loved the water tower. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, I definitely love the water tower as well. I think seeing an old building come back to life like tenfold is just amazing. And what those guys have done.
Yeah,
but I also think that's because what we like to do in Australia as well. We like to renovate houses as well. It's a passion for us. Yeah. And we're repurposing 70s houses, so it's amazing to see people that are doing it with something like with these materials that are,
it's a more of a, like they've gone more the raw term, where we're just sort of flipping houses and doing a lick of paint here and there, but they've literally taken a structure and completely gutted it and then built on that.
They really inspired us for sure.
Nice. That kind of reminds me, I don't know if you've ever heard of Christy Wolf. She's kind of a tiny house person who's a really talented builder and designer and has some of the most famous Airbnbs in the US. One of them is an Idaho potato. It's like literally a potato from she was Miss Idaho apparently. And like, this is the potato, and she turned it into a house. And one of her homes is actually a fire tower in Idaho. That was like a former, a fire tower. And that's a home. She has a Hawaii tree house. And then she also did these Hobbit houses in Washington that are like literally like round door built into the hillside. So just like really cool finding spaces that aren't necessarily homes and then turning them into an experience for a short-term rental.
100%. And I do think, like, if you're traveling to Iceland, definitely look for these unique houses.
Yeah.
Because Iceland is littered with them.
And it's a lot.
They're beautiful. And like Ingeborg actually said in the Water Tower episodes that, like, all of these old buildings that are abandoned farmhouses, like, if they don't do something about them, they will just go to waste. So to upcycle and turn them into these fancy Airbnbs is definitely a thing that they're looking for in the future.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And hopefully also, you know, Airbnbs are great. They get, you know, they let people have these unique experiences, but also hopefully there's some actual housing too for people to live in.
100%. Yeah.
Mm, definitely. I mean, they lived in that house for a long time, but they've actually built their own now down the road, which is just bigger for them. But it's utilizing the same sort of materials and resources.
Nice.
But I think, all these houses have inspired us to do that. We want to buy a block somewhere in like a forest in the middle of nowhere, you know, when you want to escape, and then just put a tiny shipping container on it.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to do.
And also Ari in the glass cottage. He's also said that a lot of his guests that stay in the house, they've literally transformed their life, and they've just said, you know what, we actually don't need all of the stuff that we have. We're very consumer, like we're a consumer generation.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really need it all. So
it's nice to live small. It's nice to minimalize.
Downscale a bit and just take a breath and
for sure.
See what's actually needed.
You accumulate a lot over the years, so it is really nice to unwind with just a few things.
Agreed.
It's good for your soul, I think.
Agreed. So what's next for you two? Do you have more tiny homes to film in your future?
The conversation's already been had with Shelter. So there might be something we're thinking. We might be either going to New Zealand or to Tasmania, just to the south of Australia.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, if you need somebody to podcast your trip, take me with you because I'm ready.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, this was really fun. I loved looking at the photos. So I will post lots of photos in the show notes for the episode. But Damien and Steph, thank you so much for being guests on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Damien and Steph for being guests on the show today. You can find the show notes, including some images of my favorite tiny homes, links to the series and more over at thetinyhouse.net/259. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/259. Well, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.